afternoon and good day to all of you. I'm Lina Mirmont with my program Lina Live. And today I have another very unusual guest. He is a very brilliant young man who lives in my community. And in fact, as an older lady, I was in a long waiting line until I got his attention. So finally, it did happen. So it is my great pleasure to invite to my conversation Casey Cook Parker. And on this note, I will welcome Casey. And I would not ask a particular specific question. I just would love to hear his voice and invite him to say anything he wishes before we will start our conversation. Casey, how are you?
I'm doing well, Lena. How are you?
Well, I'm doing so much better because I can hear you well, and I'm certainly inspired to continue our conversation, which we started a few times in the recent past. So I will give just a little history to our listeners so they will understand where I'm coming from. Casey is a son of our very dear friend, Rochelle, who was kind enough to invite us all for Mother's Day. And of course, our Mother's Day was that much better when we found out that we're in the company of several young men. And indeed, we have not been disappointed, especially when I took a full advantage and I asked Casey who he is, what is his interest in life. And I had most incredible understanding of the world, which I know so little about. And this is world of water. We all enjoy water on a spiritual sense. We take advantage of this physical beauty. Sometimes we can take advantage for our either vacational time or exercise, or we are on a boat. Well, Casey knows the water world like very, very few young people would know. His expertise and knowledge truly opened my mind. So my first question, Casey, if you remember roughly where we stopped and start to fill us in about your knowledge and about your dream, your profession, which you already know so much about, your water life, with the technology, with the achievements, and whatever you know, we would love to hear.
Well, I'm not quite sure where we had left off, but I'd be more than happy to start from the beginning.
And that's fantastic. Please do so, because I do remember some, but I certainly would profit from your repetition and perhaps a few other questions I would ask as we go. So please start.
Well, as we know, my profession is in the maritime industry. I'm currently attending school at SUNY Maritime, and I'm looking to get my degree in marine transportation. With this degree, I also will be getting a third mate's license, which entitles me to be a third mate on any American flag-holding vessel. So I can go onto the vessel. I'll be in charge of navigating the vessel, making sure it gets from point A to point B in relatively quick time and without any big misunderstandings and mishaps on the water. But by doing so, I have to go to school and learn how to do this, and that's what SUNY Maritime actually does. It's instructing us on how to do this, on what the basic concepts of marine transportation are, the navigation aspects, the engineering aspects, and things of that nature. My experience so far has been with deck side. Like I said, I'm a third mate, not a third engineer. So I would be on the bridge of the vessel, and I'm the one in charge of making sure the boat's going from point A to point B in a relatively economic fashion so that it gets there in the best manner possible. What else is there? You have to excuse me. I'm a little slow at the moment. But
this is perfectly fine. I also wanted to make sure that you have certainly what you described has to do with the water which is used for either, if not military thing, but for certain technical and special transportation. Once we will be through with this, and maybe I went too far, maybe it has nothing to do with the military thing, but definitely certain technical special transportation. At some point, I like to go into the world of massive public transportation, those huge boats which look almost like a city. And I like to ask you if you can somewhat make a connection between your expertise and these great specialties, which you're already so incredibly informed, and some knowledge on this recreational vessels. How are they connected with the technology, and what is the future of the water, water technology? So to break this down and to make it a little simpler, perhaps I should ask you, what will be your immediate step after graduation?
Well, for me personally, currently, I am looking into going into the Coast Guard. I'm personally looking into that. I like the experience that they have, the fact that I can continue to use my knowledge and my degree, and I don't have to travel all around the world to do so. So that's my personal aspect. But somebody with a degree such as my own and with a license that I will have, most of my classmates actually intend to ship out. And what they do is they will get a job with different varying cruise liners, such as Disney. They hire a lot of our cadets. Shell Gasoline, everybody knows Shell Gasoline. Well, they actually have their own corporation of tankers, which transports the fuel back and forth across the ocean into their various manufacturing plants and refineries. So Shell hires a lot of our cadets as well. And so they would get a job with the corporations such as Shell, such as Disney, and they ship out all over the world. And they transport various goods, whether it be oil, whether it be liquid natural gas, whether it be textile goods that are on a container ship, whatever it may be, and they'll transport them across the Atlantic Ocean, across the Pacific Ocean, really across any of the waterways. And that's what they do. They learn their vessels, and they can transport them across these waterways and get them there in, like, a very efficient manner and a very safe manner, such that nothing really happens to them. The vessels that you were speaking of, I believe, the big city vessels, so to speak, I believe you're thinking of cruise liners?
Like, yes.
The big passenger cruise liners?
Absolutely, yes.
Yes. Well, vessels such as that are, they're big, and that's what the companies are getting them there for. But they're constructed in a special way that allow them to carry that many people, and that allow them to transport the people around the ocean without having to deal with the rocking of the boat, which is what most people tend to think of when they think of ships. And they think of ships, and they get seasick and everything else. Well, that's mostly because some of the ships that they see, they're rocking back and forth in the high waves and seas. But cruise liners are constructed in such a way that if they hit these big waves and they hit the open waters of the ocean and everything else, they're not going to flop back and forth. They're going to stay nice and steady, and they'll turn but it's a nice slow and even turn, and so most passengers don't even realize that it's happening. So, I mean, those are...
If I can jump in for 1 second, that's a little, perhaps a stretch, but it's a similar with what they're trying to do in aviation to make airplane more sustainable, to be more sensitive to the storm, and to make more comfortable everyone in terms of sudden turbulence. So it's on the air, and you're talking about this happening on the water.
Yes. I can't speak so much with the aviation aspect. If my friend was here, he would have a heyday with that. He's a very big on aviation and piloting, and he could explain that aspect a little more to you.
I see. We might take him next time.
Maybe. I'll let him know. I'll get you in touch with him.
Wonderful. Now we're back to water.
Back to water. But, yes, like you said, it's very the construction and the technology of shipping has advanced a lot in the last, I'd say, 60, 70 years or so. So it really has come a long way. And it's gone from being, let's go out in the water and we're rocking back and forth and everybody's got to get their sea legs, to now we have these big ocean liners who are carrying upwards of 2,000 passengers to go around on the cruises and to have fun and relax and enjoy themselves. And most of these people probably wouldn't be able to go out on a smaller vessel or on a shipping vessel just because of the rocking of the waves themselves. Most of them would probably end up getting seasick or just getting lost in general on what's going on. So I think that that's a big step up and a big plus in the technology that's going on.
Now, we will take a little musical break, and before we will start our next segment, I will leave you with a thought that indeed, there were some problems with those ships. Indeed, there have been some very serious incidents where people had to interrupt their vacation. So on this a bit of a negative note, we will listen to a piece of music. We will give our wonderful guest, Casey Cook Partner, to have a little break. We will think even more about the water, and we will continue our conversation after a very, very short musical interlude. My guest today is a very handsome, talented young man, Casey Cook Parker, and we're talking about the water and his extremely mature knowledge, which goes way beyond his age, and we've been touching on some technology, we've been touching on some days which he will take after his graduation. After he will become a marine transportation specialist. And I left our first half with a question regarding indeed some serious technical issues which took place on those big ships, I call it city ships. And I would say that my question has two parts. Number one, is it negligence? Or number two, those ships being overworked?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. It can be a little bit of both on some cases. For example, the Exxon Valdez, it's a very famous case that everybody knows about because it was a very big oil spill over in Alaska. In my opinion, the Exxon Valdez was a classic case of negligence. The mate on duty at the time of the accident was informed by one of his seamen, one of the people on the deck with him, that the vessel was headed in the wrong direction. But rather than listen to somebody who I guess he viewed as being beneath him and had no idea what they were doing, and in checking himself, rechecking, he continued on with what he was doing, and we had what is considered one of the worst natural disasters and worst oil spills in the history of our country. So,
yes.
And that's for me, I consider that as negligence, because he was informed and he could easily have just done a quick compass check, a quick heading check, and he would have realized that, you know what, she's right, we shouldn't be heading in this direction, we need to bring the ship around. And we would have avoided all that. So, but it was a little bit of arrogance on his part that he thought he knew what he was doing and we had a big accident. So, but at the same time, vessels can be overworked. If a vessel is going back and forth and back and forth, and the people on duty, the mates and the duty officers, aren't staying up on their equipment, they're not checking their compasses, they're not checking their GPSs and their radars and everything to make sure everything's working and functioning properly, they can go out into a night run. They could be in the middle of a 3 o'clock in the morning run, and something could give out. The radar could go, or something could just kind of, you know, just stop working. And by doing so, it could put them in a bad situation, and they could have some kind of an accident. So it is a little bit of both. It kind of depends on the situation, and it depends on the people who are running the ship.
Yes, this is so valuable what you're saying, because personally, I would speak for many people, and it's a bit of a contradiction if it is personally why I'm speaking for many people. What I mean is that I try to get into the issue as personally as I can to form my own opinion or feeling or judgment. Then I speak to the specialists like yourself, and then hopefully as a result we have a very comprehensive answer. And I believe that if, for example, some older people, senior citizens who are listening to your story would have certainly in a nutshell answer which they struggled to get through the course of the days and details and numerous descriptions and unanswered questions. So that brings me to say something which I did express that time at the table when we had this wonderful Mother's Day, that you have this ability to make complicated very simple. And that's certainly beyond your age, because even in my age, I don't make such a quick bridge. So I need to thank you for summarizing this situation and make it extremely clear and yet extremely real and very professional. So since you achieved such a wonderful goal, I wanted to ask you, when you said it's a little bit of both, can we go a little deeper in some computerized function where we obviously getting more and more connected through the computer, even when human life is online? And we're having this less and less opportunity to confirm and to verify in a human language. And if I may say one thing with hope that your friend will join us one day, I wanted to say that one time I spoke to the pilot when I was going through a fear of flying period of my time, and he was extremely nice gentleman who was very patient to some of my worrisome questions. And he actually explained to me something which has to do with this computer connection and yet human connection. And that goes some number of years ago. And he said that he never will take off until he will be in total balance and agreement between computer and his own pair of eyes. And I bring this story because I wanted to ask you, to what extent, in your opinion and your experience and your knowledge, indeed, water specialists and people who are involved in that terrible situation which you just described, being dependent on computer, or it was in fact human error?
That's a little open-ended. There are several instances where it's human error. There can be times where the computer, in the maritime industry, on the water, we do have computers and we do have satellites, which is what we use. We have GPS, we have the ECTIS, we have the radar. And each one of these things runs on basically a computer. GPS gets its feed from a satellite. The ECTIS gets its feed from GPS. And in there, the ECTIS is an electronic chart as well. So all of our things run electronically. So if one thing goes awry, we have redundancies. Hopefully, if the ship is doing what it's supposed to, it'll have redundancies and it can back it up. But as happens in most cases, people do become dependent on these electronic backups and these electronic devices. For example, a reason that this is bad, just from my own personal experiences, is when my freshman year at this college, when the first time that I ever set out into the ocean was with this college on my freshman year, the summer of my freshman year, and my ship set off into the middle of a big storm, and we were hitting a good 20-foot waves. We were taking very big rolls, and there was one roll that we almost capsized our vessel with it. I mean, it was very close to the point of no return, so to speak, which is the point where the vessel can no longer correctly right itself to the upright position. While we were doing this, while we were rolling back and forth and we were hitting these big waves, we lost power from our power plant, which means all of our electronics devices were, we didn't have those anymore. So what we had to do was rely on our terrestrial navigation skills, which is where we took a bearing off of the land that we could see. We were hugging the coastline at the time, so we could see the land, and we could see the various, landmarks, little points on the coast that were also on an actual physical chart that we had on our vessel. So by doing so, we were able to make sure that we were continuing to go along the right course, we were the right distance away from shore, and we were where we needed to be. However, there are some vessels out there where everything is electronic and they don't necessarily use a physical chart anymore. They use these electronic charts on a computer. So by relying too much on electronics and things of that nature, it can pose a problem, because if my ship had lost power and we lost all of our electronics and yet we didn't have our physical copies of our charts, we didn't have our actual charts, we would have been lost. We would have been essentially lost at sea, but, I mean, obviously we have the coastline, so we weren't terribly lost, but we would have no real idea of where we actually were. So it can, and that can lead to problems. If you don't know how far off from the coast you are, you could end up running aground where your vessel hits, goes into water that's too shallow for it, and you hit your bottom of your vessel hits the ground in the water. And that can lead to problems on its own. That can lead to vessels leaking oil and leaking fuel into the water. And that causes, you know, big problems, big environmentally and, you know, just physically. So I think that by relying too much on electronics, it causes these problems. So that can lead to human error. So I think that it's best to have both these backups, and human error along with computer error can be corrected. If you see a problem on the computer, like if you visually check something and you see something on a computer and they don't line up right, your visual check is always more accurate than what's on the computer. So it's easier to do it that way than it is to just rely on a computer. I mean, GPS fixes are only accurate up to, well, depending on the type of fix that you're giving, most GPS fixes are only accurate to about 20 meters. So that can, 20 meters, when you're pulling into port and when you're doing piloting operations, that can be a lot. I mean, that can be the difference between making it into the area, making it through the port line, and running aground on a shoal that's 15 meters to your port. So it's very open-ended.
Casey, this story is so moving, and I do remember, I think, either your mother or your other friend did ask you regarding what was the most memorable or maybe even scary experience in your life. I don't remember exactly how the question was pronounced, but certainly I cannot thank you enough for telling this story, because that brings all of us that much closer, not only to the water, not only to the challenges, gives us knowledge. What does it take to be in the water from technical point of view? And I would say the most important, human point of view. I'd like to take a little break again, and again to leave us with the question, how much our profession makes an influence on our character. Casey is certainly absolutely one of the finest young people I've met, and I believe that his talent, knowledge, and love for his profession has something to do with his absolutely outstanding character. On this note, we will take another break, and then we will continue conversation with Casey Cook Parker.
Thank you.
And with this much, much lighter music than our subject, not to say that our subject is heavy, but it's extremely, extremely expressive because we're dealing with the water and we gradually learning what does it take to run water, right? What does it take to be underwater with the power of knowledge for us as a simple citizens with the power of pleasure? And all these connections, my very special guest, Casey, is making with a clarity, wonderful simplicity, so we all can understand what he's talking about, even though subjects can be quite involved and quite complicated. I left with the thought that, Casey, your knowledge and your experiences in the water certainly has to do with your character. Just in general, can you make a connection how this absolutely remarkable experience which you felt on the water, obviously with some fear, and much more complex, perhaps even touch of scare of death or scare of inevitable, how did it, if not build your character, but how it made you feel after you being a true winner? After all, you conquer the Mother Nature challenge.
Well, I think after experiencing something such as that and being out on the sea itself, it does build your character. I mean, if you can, you do these and you do the effort of being on the sea, you see what's going on and how it can be, how the sea can turn disastrous in such a short period of time, that you learn that you can make it. And if you can do that and you can make it through that and you can build yourself up through these experiences, you'll learn that you can handle yourself in most situations, if not any situation that comes your way. It's very rewarding being out on the ocean and going through all these different experiences and seeing what's out there and seeing how everything relates to one another and how everything can change quite suddenly. And it's nice to know that you can make it through that. And it's, for me, it's very rewarding to know, you know, I made it through this. I made it through a very nasty storm, one of the worst storms that my ship had ever been through, that my school had ever endured. And we made it through it, and we survived it. And for me, that's a very rewarding thought, and that's, for me, it's like, you know what, I can make it through, I can do this. So I think that that's very rewarding. I don't know how else to describe it. It's very satisfying.
You certainly describe this because, frankly, for something of that magnitude, and for something of that human challenge, not only you describe this so clearly, but mostly you describe what is in between the line. No one can really put exact word because it's in your feelings. It is, because I'm a musician, I would say it's like a music power, which gives you that energy, which carries you through with very different situations. And we all have storms, and we all have the situations in life, and sometimes they are so unpredictable, and sometimes they are so deep that we are debating where to think or to act, to walk away or to stay longer. All of this part what we call a maturity. And I believe that one of the reasons you're indeed so mature is because you went through such experience, such extreme and uncompromising challenge of Mother Nature, but also you've been involved with other people. So I would say that that experience brought you in so many levels. Of course, this horrendous storm, but you also had to follow certain instruction, I guess. There was certain spontaneity in self-decision, obviously connecting with others or maybe even helping with your moment skill and moment intuition. I mean, this is the whole orchestra of feelings and your personal moment decisions, which not only helped you but make you feel as a winner. I'm talking about this because, because we have so many challenges today, and it's not only economy, it's not only some scary conflict which beyond our control, but it's also feeling that our life in the hands of other people, whether it's a politician or business people or, in fact, doctors. But the final line is we have to live with our thoughts, with our emotions, and we have to sustain this pressure. And I feel that what you went through certainly gave you these keys which help you to sustain a lot of pressure which perhaps you will face in your life. And my sincere admiration for you and my also sincere hope that whatever situations you will find yourself in life, you will find one or maybe two keys which you will need. Because you certainly... I think we have a little problem with our connection. I don't know if Casey hears me because I had some little undesirable noise. But if Casey can hear me, then I will continue with my question. And I would ask you if Casey hear me, because I certainly lost Casey, but we will try to catch him on the water. We will certainly will fish for him, because without his cruising and guidance, we certainly cannot swim as well as we need to. So I will elaborate in the last thought which I expressed, which moved me, I'm sure, just as strongly as all my listeners, that this experience which Casey certainly was heroically faced with made him quite a hero. And what's interesting thing is that even though we're in very modern computerized society, we still need that much more of that to predict the storms, to prevent the situations which can create a danger for us. And I hope that we will get Casey back, and I will ask him some questions, how he personally feels computers will be making our life easier, more convenient, and perhaps more efficient on the land, but also on the water. And I, so far, do not hear Casey's voice, and I'm sorry for the fact that you're hearing mine much longer than even I wanted to hear myself, but I'm trying just to express my tremendous admiration for Casey's experience, and also for the fact that he is opening some windows to our knowledge. And perhaps next time when we're on the water, we will be that much more appreciative. What does it take to send us on the water? I think Casey is back.
Yeah, I'm back.
Casey, thank you so much. I was as gracefully as I could apologizing for expanding my voice, wording, and thoughts longer because I'd rather to have you back with your expertise and your thoughts. But I did fly on the air feeling that I'm on the water. So I will bring my question, my next question, making a link between our elaboration regarding the connection of your experience in the water and your personal self-feeling about your character. And then I was adding about some life situations and certain keys which you can find because of your tremendous experience, willpower, and strength. And with that, I'd like to bring the next question. How do you see and what is your personal expectation of the technology to either sense the storm, hopefully prevent it altogether, or there's still limitations? Are we still need human?
Me personally, I think that we will always have the human aspect in it, regardless of how advanced our technology comes. Because as far as technology will go, a visual acuity and visually seeing what's going to happen and what's going on right now is going to be way more reliable than having a computer telling you that, oh, 50 miles to the north, where beyond what you can see, there's a storm going on. And I think that there's always going to be a human aspect in everything that we do, both on the water and in real life and business aspect. So, I mean, that's just me personally, though. I feel that we are going to advance in our technology. We've, like I said earlier, we've advanced in the maritime industry just in the last 60 years alone. We are now able to receive weather forecasts and see what's going on currently. We can see, all right, in this area of the world, there's a low pressure going on. In this area, there's a high pressure. We can see where the barometer readings are in certain areas and how they're going to affect us in our current area, like in our current position, and again, when we're at this area, when we get to where we're going and all along the path of how it's going to affect us. And I think that that's in and of itself is a great tool to have, to look at a forecast and to be able to say, all right, we're going to be here in about 7 hours. When we get there, we're going to be hitting a storm front, you know. Well, then you can say, well, maybe I don't want to go through a storm, and you can track your way around the storm so that you don't have to go right through the heart of it and deal with all the weather that comes with it. And I think that that's a great advancement. I mean, back in the early stages of the maritime industry, they didn't have this. They knew, I have to stay on this compass heading in order to get to where I'm going, so that's what I'm going to do. And when a storm came, they had to just fight it their way through it. There was no way of getting around the storm, no way of surpassing it. So in and of itself, being able to track a storm and see where it's going and how it is, I think is a great technological advancement. But again, I see that there's always going to be a human element, because how do we get those forecasts? Well, we get them because people are physically in the water in those areas saying, hey, this is what's going on in our current position in this area. This is what is going on. And by doing this and tracking the barometer areas and seeing the temperatures and the wind directions, that's what allows people to predict how that front is going to travel. So I think that there's always going to be a human aspect in everything that goes on, and I think that as advanced as technology goes, it's still going to require a human input to it.
And I'm so, so relieved, because being somewhat easy with the human tissue of the issue. I sometimes feel a bit limited or perhaps even inappropriately adjusted to the 21st century, because when I see the computer, which indeed became part of my life, but there are more things I don't know about it than the things I do know. So you actually gave the answer, which is somewhat philosophical, in the relationship between technology and human, but also you made some parallel with some other technology and some other areas where human and computer are living together. I personally feel that there is sometimes a bit of a danger, especially in the medical field. And if computer, for example, is down, we are depending on a backup system. And of course, when it's, it has to do with a human life or some kind of a urgent situation, that becomes that much more problematic. But
I agree with that. And I agree completely with that. I mean, I just had that experience last night when I was in the ER for mild things, and everything's computerized. I mean, they scan everything. You come in, they give you a band with the barcode, they scan your barcode, they scan the medication. There's no paper charts anymore. So now, if something happens, if there's a storm front that hits the hospital and the hospital loses power and the computers go out, what are they going to do then? I mean, there's no physical record of what's going on to each patient. So I think that that's a danger to my, for me. I think that's a bit of a danger. So I think that there should always be redundancies. As brilliant as having no paper records is and having everything electronic and as smooth as it allows everything to run, I think that there should always be a physical backup to everything. So just because, I mean, just like the example I gave before with the storm, there people use electronic charts, but if something goes wrong and you lose power, it's you need to have a physical backup. You need to have the physical charts ready to go so that you can go over to it and say, all right, this was our last position, and this is where we're going, and you can get to it without having to deal with the stress of trying to get the power restored and then rebooting everything and then finding out where you are then. You need to be able to get ready to go and have a physical backup. So, like, I agree with you. Having the dependency on electronics and computers that people do nowadays, I think is a little, like I said, as smooth as it lets it go, I think it's a little risky. And I think that there are problems and complications that can go with it.
Such a tremendous example. My great sympathy for you that you had to go through that. And I also wanted to say that I'm so privileged to have you today as if nothing happened to you. What a character, speaking about your nature. I will continue saying that there is a certain human and mental element, because people so depend on the computer that they almost become a little bit mentally lazy. And I believe that doctors might have that much more difficulties because of diagnosis and because of the alertness, which computers certainly cannot produce, because computer only for the data and for the function and some individual current condition of a certain patient, totally in hands of a nurse who has to transmit all information to the doctor. So if there will be somewhat a stereotype to go first to the doctor and then to the patient, then we will be in a a little bit of the technological wilderness, I would say. And I hope that we certainly will be able to continue this conversation again, because frankly, I didn't even expect that we will go so deeply to some other areas. But your idea of communication is so profound, and you conceptualizing all these relationships between technology and human is so impressive that I would say that the only way I will finish this program is to have your promise to be back.
Well, you can look forward to it. When you want to have another interview and conversation, I will be more than happy to come back.
Wow. That is just wonderful promise. And I wanted to thank you so, so much. It was more than enjoyable. And I certainly would hope that we will get together with your mother soon. But mostly, and most importantly, I would say, we need you to feel better. I hope that you will be very kind to yourself, that you will use help of your friends like ourselves and people you do care about and people who care about you. So on this note, I will conclude by saying that I had very wonderful special guests, and we all been witnessed listening to his story. Not only he reached our mind, he did reach our souls. And with his wonderful promise to be back, I would say again that that was my conversation with Casey Cook Parker. Casey, thank you so, so much.
It was wonderful. Thank you for having me.
And we will say until soon, and we will conclude as usual with other musical notes. And that was your Lena Miremont with her program Lena Live. Until soon, with my all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.